fundamentally, there is nothing that needs to be said. Even saying that is extra. Even saying just this, much too much. Fundamentally, you lack nothing. Or I should say, you need nothing, and you lack no thing. Despite this being so, it's not so for us. Sometimes, often, occasionally. So, there's two aspects of practice that we can speak of. And that's what I want to explore this morning. One aspect is our base fundamental practice, whether it's just sitting, being breathing, being listening, being awareness, being a koan, if that's the practice we have, or various other basic practice of this present moment, or this awareness. It's the ongoing practice of our life. It's what we do when we sit formally, and it's our functioning throughout the day, and it's finding opportunities in our functioning throughout the day to do exactly what we're doing, to be exactly as we, the universe, are, whether it's in stillness or in activity. That's one aspect of our practice. But there's another aspect, and that's the aspect of when circumstances and conditions arise where we notice ourselves being caught up, reactive, suffering, being in pain, and doing things that might or might not result in more entanglements. See, that's another side of practice. Another side that in one sense is very much connected to what I talked about as the first aspect of practice. First and second, or isn't about one being better than the other. It's just different aspects of this same life. But it's valuable to see these two aspects and to see the connectedness of them, and to know what's what, so that we can appropriately and skillfully respond, be the present moment of what's so, whether it's someone yelling at us, whether it's all of a sudden what we're doing collapsing, whether it's, and you fill in, or whether it's simply sitting quietly at your morning zazen, or walking from the car to the office building, or simply driving down the highway. It could be simply driving down the highway, or it could be driving down the highway and having all these other cars cutting in and out, and you're getting more and more upset about the way they're driving. It's both of them are available in each activity. It could even be your morning zazen in the midst of agitation about all sorts of circumstances that are occurring. Agitation arising, and right there is the opportunity to see what's going on. The habits of getting caught up in that, attachment and clinging and reaction, and then seeing what's skillful right now. What's skillful effort on my part? So, first I want to see is it clear the two different aspects that I'm talking about? And then how do we see them? How do we see practicing in the midst of them? And then how do we see the relatedness of one aspect of practice to the other? Now, of course, these aren't two aspects. These are just our life. And our life manifests the conditions and circumstances of the moment. And yet, it might be skillful and useful to speak about it in this way to help us clarify a bit this that we are, this life that we are. And that's the point of us speaking together. So I want to stop now and encourage you to reflect on what I said and your own practice life, and bring up how we can go a little further in this conversation, because this is our conversation together, not mine.
Yeah, it seems pretty clear, the two aspects. But like you say, there's not a clear demarcation line between the two. It's, you know, one aspect easily flows into the other, and vice versa. But what I've noticed, you know, talking about the second aspect, is that, let's say, you're making me angry somehow. Not that you ever do. But let's say that you are. The first effort, maybe the hardest effort in a situation like that, is to notice that I'm believing that the anger is out there, that you are the anger, as opposed to here is the anger, this is the anger. And it may or may not really have much to do with you.
That's right.
And once I can notice that, then it becomes easier.
Yes.
Just to say, okay, well, here's the anger, and what does that feel like? And what I mean, you can get into what am I holding on to, and, you know, but just seeing it usually is enough to kind of start to let go of that, and to see what really is going on, what really is out there, as opposed to what I believe is out there.
Well, you used a very good word. You said, you're making me angry.
Yes.
And we often believe such things. People and circumstances are, quote, making me angry.
They, more than making, they are the angry. It's out there.
Well, it's fine to notice that someone else is being angry, but the making me angry of that someone else is making me angry is what is specifically, I think, valuable, as you say, to notice.
I guess what I'm trying to say is I believe that you are actually the source of the anger.
That's right. That's right. Making me.
Yeah, exactly. But it turns out that's not true at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, and noticing that is an important, very valuable, to be able to notice that, because that's, in a way you could say, an important step in that second, what I call the second aspect. Because then you can go a little further and see what is and what to do. Or what is it that I'm already doing? And is that what's to do?
Just as a clarification, is he doing something that you think is angry? I mean, is he perpetrating your anger? I mean, by something he's doing?
You mean actually, or in the story
that
we're telling? Maybe not. That's not really the important thing, I don't think.
Well, I mean,
if Genyo says something,
how would he be the angry out there if?
No, the source.
See, it. I like what you said, because think in our language, we often say, "You're making me so angry," or "You're making me so upset." I mean, how many times have we heard phrases like that, whether in our mind or other people saying it, and how much we take for granted that that's the nature of the universe. People, things make us angry, or the other make us happy. Now, it's easier for us to want to talk about make me angry, make me happy. We say, oh yeah, that's great. And there's even songs. You make me so happy. Isn't there some such song somewhere?
Probably. There's probably lots of them.
But, so it's interesting to notice that we really do believe things make us angry. This isn't to say that there aren't circumstances when we discover that anger arises, and that in a sense, anger is part of this natural seeming habit of how it is when such and such occurs. And things occur. And part of occurring is also the feelings of anger, upset, hurt. That's part of the circumstances and conditions that are occurring in life. But our practice opportunity, in a way, is to be able to be bigger than just that narrow way of seeing conditions and circumstances arising, whether they're so-called internal or so-called external, whether they're so-called mine or so-called others. See, that's that second aspect of practice that I'm talking about. And it's that second aspect that in a way is supported and nurtured by the first, what I call the first aspect of practice, of being present, which is made possible by the fact that there's this ongoing practice, ongoing being present practice, that makes possible that, if I almost say it, it trains us to be able to notice when we're caught up in that habit reaction.
In a situation. I had a situation this weekend where it was where I felt the words of people that were speaking them to me was, oh, that's very dangerous stuff for me as my spirit.
Uh-huh.
I kind of get into a panic mode about it almost.
About what they were saying.
Yes, what they were saying to me. Now, they didn't mean many different things, many perspectives that I don't know what the true intent. But at one moment I was like, oh, because it meant this, and oh, that could be real bad for our relation, our harmonious communication. And then I thought, should I say something? Should I not say something? And it was difficult. I said, now this is a moment when I can really start to use some of my discipline to kind of calm myself down.
Or to see even what it is that's being said, so that maybe it is, as you said, that they're saying such and such out of anger or hurtfulness, and maybe it's not. And if they are saying that, then what is it skillful for me to respond to that? Is it skillful for me to either get angry with them or hurt myself and feel like, oh, that means it's the end of, is that, and I don't know. And we don't know. There isn't a formula, so to speak, but we have to be able to see it and see what's going on, so to speak, inside, outside, in order to be able to then take the next step, whatever the next step might be. So, yeah.
You mentioned to me something about how our zazen energizes the other aspect of our practice.
Yeah.
Can you say a little bit more about that?
Well, in one sense, you could say we develop a capacity, one, to be present when someone says or does things, as was just spoken of. We develop the capacity to be there and not to right away believe whatever we want to believe about it, whether it's and do, you know, back to them or back to us about that. So there's that. Because in the process of simply sitting, you discover all the things that can appear in thoughts, feelings, just sitting quietly. You discover that that's possible. All sorts of thoughts. Angry, foolish, confusing, hurt, etc., etc., can appear in this sitting quietly and being present. At least some of us discover that. Most of us discover that. All of us discover it in our own way. What can appear as this mind chatter, as this emotion thought body chatter. And it appears and disappears. And we develop the capacity of being present and allowing it to appear and disappear. Being, if you want to use that word, a big container, a big spaciousness in which that can come and go. So that capacity continues more than just the formal sitting. It continues in various other aspects of our life. It continues in our daily functioning, especially if we make the effort to practice at various moments throughout the day of just being, just doing whatever we're doing. And it becomes, if I use the word, part of our repertoire. What we're capable of, what we have familiarity with. And it also requires us to make an effort to summon it, so to speak, to be in that space. So, does that make sense? So that's what happens. And it's up to us to make the effort when we notice how, whatever the reaction, since we're talking about anger, the anger reaction appears when we feel it bodily, when we notice it in our thoughts, or the sadness, or the hurt, or the, and then to see what is there right now. What is, we don't have to think it out. In a way, we do it out of being present. We can do what right now calls for. But there's times when we need to actually reflect for a moment. What's skillful right now? Until it becomes something we're more in touch with, if I use that kind of word, and can do without having to, quote, think about it. But it becomes part of our natural capacity. Just like you, when you start swimming, you learn in the shallows, but then you once you develop the capacity to swim in the shallows, then you could also swim in deeper water. It's the same swimming. But because you developed the capacity where you worked with your fears and discovered that in spite of fearfulness about swimming, you can swim, you then can swim in deeper water. And you can then see, oh, I can swim in this lake. Or, oh, I can't swim in the lake. Even though I can swim in water that deep, it's too rough. Because you also start being familiar with your capacity and what, and you might discover, despite the fact that the water's rough, I got dumped out of the boat and I have to swim here as best I can because this is the water the boat dumped me into. I didn't have a choice. Or I have a choice, and the choice is right now the universe somehow put me in this rough water. So I swim as best I can in this rough water and hope to find a shore, a buoy, a lifeboat, etc. And if I have a choice, I'll put on the life vest before I get into the rough water. When I don't have a choice, I do my best. Yeah.
I came in here today and I felt like my mind was runaway freight train. It's been doing it for a while. It didn't just happen this morning, but it's getting pretty settled with this practice, and then recently it's just like whoosh. Anyway, I spoke to Bellew and he said, feel the bodily experience of that, which I consistently forget to be mindful of, and very beneficial. When we came out here, we were doing the walking meditation. I was right over there, I remember, and I just, the freight train kind of turned into like this kind of whirl, this, like a whirlwind.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had this sense of either running to or running from something. And my first thought was, what is it? What is it? And then my second thought was, I don't have to know what it is. All I have to do is just go with the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And just being able to just go through that, by the time I got back over here to my chair, there peace was restored. Peace mm-hmm. was restored. And for somebody like me, that is valuable. That is so valuable. And I sat right here in this chair with kind of the mind finally relaxed. When I was on that freight train, it was like I was trying to figure out where to grab. Where to hold on, because I'm going to fall off here. And, or I was trying to figure out how to let go. I didn't know which, you know. And I was able to just sit here in this chair then, and everything was kind of like... And then I had this awareness of sitting here with all of you. And I'll never be able to explain to you in words how important that is to me and how good that feels. It is such a feeling of peace. And you know, I knew that Delinda was down there. I hadn't seen her, laid eyes on her since I walked through that door. I had never seen her visually. I knew she was there. And it was like a peace with all that. And I knew that all you were here. And, anyway, that's all of it in a nutshell.
Good. Thank you. And what is it is a fine question, and to know that the way to address it is by being it. Not necessarily, I mean, what we often want to do is want to then give words as an answer to what is it. And in a way, diving into the present moment, if I say it that way, is the way to directly taste what is it. Then we know. Doing, going. And the freight trains appear and they disappear according to their own time, their own schedule. They don't ask us, they don't check their timetable with our timetables. That's being this ongoing change. And part of it, as you say, goes away, it might mean what goes away is as much our concern and reaction to it. The circumstances are the circumstances, and yet our reactions are our, in a way, we can use the word clinging or bouncing off it, as opposed to being present with it, whatever the its are, this life universe that we are, arising, passing, as it does. And having the capacity and the spaciousness to embrace that and to be intimate with that. With all the circumstances that are, both so-called internal and so-called external and so-called bodily and so-called mentally, which are just different ways, different aspects of looking at and reflecting on and clarifying this life that isn't any particular category except that we sometimes want to use them, and some of them can be skillful and useful. Yeah.
You know, just sort of reading that what Ed was saying, it took me many, many years to come to the understanding that all the feelings and thoughts and whatever I have come from within me, and that nothing out here, I mean, things can, you know, trigger that for me. That nothing out here is really the cause of it, but at the same time, it's like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm trying to formulate this. It's my reaction, and whether I want to take responsibility for all these feelings or emotions or thoughts that are going on. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult when you're in reaction to want to take responsibility for it.
Yeah.
For me, anyway. And the clinging. I have to catch myself clinging because I'm not always aware that I'm clinging or grasping or whatever. And even if it's a peaceful time,
it seems natural to use the word clinging or to attach or to believe. It seems natural to us. So how we think about things, how we feel about things, often becomes the way we see them. And we then see them in a very narrow way. And we see them in ways that, unfortunately, can result in suffering and in stress. Because it's inaccurate, because it's limited. Because of the clinging and attachment in the midst of the natural changes that can never fulfill our ideas about how it will be, or should be, or could be, or should have been, and you could fill in the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's very valuable. And the ability to see that, as you say, in part is what I start off with, the first aspect of practice, of being present. We begin naturally to be able to see that more clearly, or it becomes more transparent where that appears, and therefore enables us, when it's difficult in terms of the second aspect, enables us to do, act, be, respond skillfully or appropriately, rather than just out of that clinging and narrow vision.
I like from the class, and this has come up several times. Mm-hmm. Uchiyama brings up this phrase, or Okamura brings up this phrase from Uchiyama, opening the hand of thought.
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Because it kind of, you know, one thing I've been sometimes confused about in practice is this idea of effort.
Mm.
You know, what effort to make, or what effort means, and, you know, how do you use that concept of effort? But then, you know, a phrase like opening the hand of thought is, in a way, expressing effort that is no effort.
Yeah.
It's the release of an effort that is already there. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense.
It's, if you want to expand it, it's opening the hand, or the clutching of thought, of feeling, of believing. And it's bodily, mentally, all together, body-mind functioning. It's not that there's anything wrong with thought or feeling or believing or any of that, except that if we grab onto them, then that much we can't see them for what they are and can't see where they might be skillful and appropriate and where they might not. I mean, it's fine to, you know, have applesauce in your meal, but if you take applesauce and clutch onto it and pour it on everything that you eat, a lot of us won't want to eat most of what's in front of us because we don't want applesauce on our mashed potatoes, on our cereal, on our toast, in our milk, in our tea. We want applesauce just in our applesauce. So it's the same with those clutching of that we do. So we have to, in a way, opening is being present. In a way, always, if we say the first aspect of practice that I was talking about, or one aspect, is the opening into the present moment of being this, or being body-mind, or being just sitting, or all the other ways we say it, or even being just the koan. Yeah. Oh, okay, one, two.
So I have a relationship in mind.
Uh-huh.
So I walk in a room.
Mm-hmm.
And something comes up. It's a thought. It's an opinion in this relationship. And I notice it.
Mm-hmm.
And these thoughts have come up for a long time in this relationship.
Yeah.
It's so hard to do. So I see it. And through practice, I try to, you know, let that go. And you say, then be skillful. What does that place look like? Am I at some place where I've let that go, and now I'm going to relate in a way that's different?
It's having it come up and not having to hold on to it, so it can be in the room. As you said, you walk in the room But it's in the room with the person and with all the other capacities you have of being you with that person. So that whatever you're doing together, speaking, doing all the different ways you are with that person, can include that thought, feeling that's come up, but also can include all sorts of other ones. But if you just focus on and hold on to that one and everything comes out of that one, then in a way, the way you can be with that person becomes very narrow and might result in back and forth anger or upset or hurt or whatever. Whereas if that's not the only way you could be with that person, then you can look at each other, you can speak to each other, and not everything has to come through that thought feeling about that person. Then you might see, well, maybe it's accurate. Maybe the only thing that that person is capable of doing is ABC. And then maybe it's accurate to say, do I want to do ABC with them? How is it best to do ABC with them? But it might be also to see, oh, I could invite them to MNO. And they, who knows what they'll say, but I've never done that before because I've always only seen ABC with them. Now, it's often a question of seeing what are really the specifics of this with this person.
Because you can, for the long-term relationship, you can walk in, you can notice that familiar reaction.
Yeah.
You can try to draw on your training, and you can say, okay, now I've noticed this, I'm here, what's skillful now? And the same, and of course you're expecting some different reaction on the other side. and they don't do that, they just do the same thing.
Good.
And the same feeling comes up again from your side.
And the feeling comes up, and yet being there with them, despite the fact the feeling comes up, despite the fact that they are who they are, they're doing what they're doing, that's not your job, then what do you choose to do there? Not necessarily just figuring it out, but being with them. What do you choose to do there? I don't know. And sometimes it means not being willing to not know what the next is, and be there with not knowing, with them doing whatever it is they're doing, and then seeing. I don't know, maybe for a while it's being not knowing when you're with them, and seeing how that is, including that first, which I say, habitual reactiveness to them. I don't know. Because in a way, though we're being spacious, that's also because it's us and them together, it's also allowing spaciousness for them. When and how they sense that and respond or react to that, that's not ours to decide. But if we offer it to them, then that's there. It might be that they don't, they're so caught up in their usual habit that they continue to do and suffer in that way. Then I don't know. I don't know how often you want to be with them. You can, that's part of your choice too. But when you are, you don't have to be limited and entangled in that usual clinging habit. And what comes of that is part of this life process, this life functioning, this life serving of being present.
Every situation can't be pleasant.
No.
The world isn't like that.
And it's not about fixing others.
And it's not about, there's something wrong with me because every situation isn't pleasant. There's something wrong
That's
with
right.
the world because every situation, some things aren't pleasant.
Yeah. When you go out and it's cold and you don't have a coat, or even if you do have a coat and it's blowing snow, you're going to be cold and blowing snow and be uncomfortable and shivery. And you just do it. And hopefully you only have to be out in that for a limited amount of time. And you can go into some place that's warm, or that the snow will stop. But we don't have a choice in what the weather that appears in our universe is.
Sometimes I think I expect every situation should be pleasant, or else I'm not a good Zen student, or a good person, or not smart enough, or not something enough.
Well, if you look out in the universe...
It ain't like that.
That's the aspect of what should I say, the impermanence, constant change of life, of birth.
Suffering.
Well, I don't even want to add that. That's added. I mean, in the sense that birth, growth, old age, sickness, death are the way it is. And suffering or stress about it occurs, and yet there's an optional aspect of it. We need not add that, cling to that. That's exactly what our practice is about, is about going beyond suffering. Well, Breton?
Too many words.
Okay. Yeah.
I like David's question a lot. So I guess you be with the experience, and then my mind wants to say, what's the value of that?
The value is that's your life. That's our life.
But in a way, it feels like it opens you up to vulnerability, too, to take on the other person's suffering.
Well, I don't know that you have to take on their suffering, but be big enough so that they can suffer in your presence when they're in your presence. Because that's the nature of what we encounter. It's when you're with someone who's old or dying and in pain, that's what you're encountering at that point. And you can't take certain things away, but you can be present with them and share that to the extent of your capacity. And that's the best that you have to offer them. You have, if we use the expression, can offer them non-fear, so that you can share that with them.
Or you've opened and you explained, open the hand of thought, and you're not clinging to what they're doing in front of you.
Or what you're thinking about what they're doing. Yeah. Or feeling about what they're doing.
Let them be in that.
Yeah. And that opening is body-mind. It's visceral. I mean, so it's not just I'm thinking about opening. That's what Zazen is. That's why it's body-mind breath, or body-mind world, or just sitting. Okay. Thank you.